We're here with Stephanie. You're here 3 of your 4 months now?
3 and a half, actually.
3 and a half of your 4 months. You're almost done.
I have 2 weeks before I leave, yes.
Okay, and you came here from overseas, right?
I did. I live in Brussels, Belgium. I work for the Army.
I actually have a friend, Ryan Harvey, who's over there in Belgium right now.
Is Ryan Harvey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know him?
No, I don't, but I've heard the name. So
he used to work here in ACS.
Okay.
And I don't know what he does in Belgium now, but that's where he is.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a small country, but a lot of military installations on it. There's MCOM, where I don't work, and then there's the Joint Staff and NATO. So there's tons of different military.
I believe he works under MCOM.
Yeah, I think if he worked ACS here, he probably went to ACS there.
So. Okay.
All right, it's a small world.
Yeah.
Army is small.
So you came here to help us get people hired.
I came here on what you would determine, what you would probably call a career broadening assignment.
Okay.
The career broadening assignment task was to improve hiring at Fort McCoy.
Okay.
Something that I think is good to know, and maybe for the people who might read your article, is that the career broadening assignment means that I'm coming here to learn something I don't know anything about. So it's something in my career field that I've never done before. So human resources, civilian personnel, and recruiting is not an area of expertise for me. I didn't know anything about it.
So what is your normal area of expertise?
So I'm an office manager.
Okay.
So I do things like task management, budget, IT management for an office for the USMR at SHAPE. So... human resources and personnel management is in the broad scope of an administrative officer's duties, but it's not something that my particular PD has me doing.
Okay.
And so when this came up, I was like, great opportunity to come and learn a little bit about human resources, civilian personnel, and recruiting so that I could possibly incorporate that back into my own job, as well as hopefully provide a little bit of help here.
That's definitely career broadening, yes.
Yeah, definitely career broadening. So, you know, in typical Army style, it's on-the-job training. I didn't know anything about it. I came here, they said, you're going to do this, and then it was OJT for me. I learned a little bit about how civilian personnel works and how recruiting works. And, you know, with the goal to, I think the colonel's goal was to hire a lot of people. But that's the long-term goal.
Right.
The short-term goal really is to evaluate and improve some of the practices internally to get, you know, steps 1, 2, and 3 to get to step 100, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, the stated goal was definitely to come here and improve hiring, but there were a lot of little things in that, you know, learn how CPAC works and interacts with certain things, so we know how to make the PDs right, or... one of the big issues when I got here was that, and still is, that the police department's having a hard time hiring people.
I think that's been a traditional problem with their hiring process.
So, I did early on, what was really one of the first things I tackled was, what's up with the police PDs? You know, they've got these 6s and 7s, but if you read the OPM guidance on police PDs, it says you have to have all this experience to come in as a 6 or a 7. But when you look at the local community here in Wisconsin,
it's not really the case.
It's not the case, right? People don't have that experience. So what do we do, right? How do we fix that? Well, it's not a short-term solution, but long-term, you know, some options are, you know, provide competitive pay. Well, we can't really do that because the Army sets the paycheck value. We can provide incentives. Yes, we can do that. There are some incentives that we can provide to people. But the real challenge is by the time you get somebody who has the experience required, they're past the point where they need those incentives. They don't need a hiring bonus and student loan repayment because they're already beyond that in their career. So then the next question is, well, how do you hire people at a lower grade so you can get entry-level people and train them? Right. And the problem here was that the PDs were just set to 6 and 7, and you couldn't go below that to look for, you know, a graduate from Western Tech who would have the appropriate experience and education to come in as a GS4, but Fort McCoy doesn't have a GS4. Or you could go out to University of Wisconsin at wherever and get a criminal justice graduate who could come in as a GS5, because the 4 years of criminal justice degree would do that,
mm-hmm.
but Fort McCoy doesn't have a GS5 police officer on board. My first task when I got here really was tracking down and understanding, why don't we have these? How can we change it? What's the MCOM policy? And I just found out yesterday that CPAC classification has agreed to do the 4 and 5 PD based on the research that we did.
Okay, just kind of reclass things and so we can bring in more entry level folks.
Right. So I really, what it boiled down to was, I tracked down whoever wrote the policy at MCOM headquarters, and I got on their calendar and I said, hey, I was like, hey, I'm here as a developmental assignment, and so this might not be the right way to approach this, but I only have 4 months, so here it is. I need to know, how do we overcome this problem, and when you wrote this policy, was your intent to prevent us from having a GS4 and 5? Or was it just to standardize the 6, 7, 8, 9 that, people have? So there's a little bit of just figuring out what MCOM's intent was and then translating it to something that CPAC here could use.
And sometimes it means readdressing things that haven't been addressed in a while.
Right.
Sounds like that's what you did, basically.
Well, yeah, it is. And also, it was a learning experience for me, because when I came in, and they told me about this problem set, and I looked at all of the documentation, it kind of looked like we couldn't do it. But I said, because I'm not an HR person, and I don't know all the rules, when I just read it as a layperson, I was like, I don't really see that. So I'm going to call somebody at MCOM to find out if that's really what that means. It took a little while, and like I said, we just got confirmation from CPAC that all of that research has now turned into, yes, they are going to issue a 4 and 5 PD for the police. Now,
that's great news, actually.
It is great news. The question is, will that make a difference? Who knows?
Well, it's going to take time to find out, but I think it will.
It's going to take time to find out. So one of the things that I've discovered through this whole process is, like, it's really hard to tell what will help, because there are no fast turnarounds in any of this. This will, if we get a 4 and 5 PD for police and open that up to recent graduates, will that equate to people coming here as entry level police trainees to become police officers? I don't know. We probably won't know that till next year. Because they're just now working on the PD, so it'll be next year's graduation class that we're looking at.
So the question is, well, these new, if they get the new PDs approved, and then if we start getting new trainees coming in, how long will they stay in that PD? Will it be for a year or 6 months to move up to be police officers?
So it should be a year, and then assuming they meet all their requirements.
I guess once they go to the academy, then it would be full-fledged police officers, and it'd be a 6 or 7.
Yeah, it takes about a year to complete all the training at grade 4 to go to grade 5. So it works out about a year, and so then the other thing that the police department was working with DES was, like, how do we get these incentives documented, and how do we advertise them so that we have dollar amounts to put out to people.
Yeah.
But what we found out from CPAC is, you can't really give people, you can't commit to dollar amounts,
right?
We have to be careful about what we promise. We have student loan repayment is available if you qualify. Retention bonuses are available if you qualify. Hiring bonuses are available if you qualify. We can't promise anything to anyone until, CPAC and, reviews everything and make sure it's all above board. I didn't know what a classification office was. So this is completely new to me. My first thought was, well, the guys over at MCOM say we can do this. Let's just do it. And then I found out after talking to CPAC, oh no, there's this whole other process that the Fort McCoy.
Here's learning curve then.
Yeah. So for me, everything was new. I came here and knew nothing about any of this. And so every single thing that I started was, I had to learn what the classification people do, because I didn't know that was a thing. And Now I know that just because MCOM says we can do a 4 and a 5 PD, that's not a magic solution. Now somebody at CPAC and here has to take these PDs and classify them and make them appropriate for the local community and all the things. So everything's a little bit of a process.
So I'm glad I'm catching you at this point. So this is like basically your first 100 days kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you really learned a lot, sounds like.
Learned a lot.
I'm wondering when you leave here, are you gonna kind of like leave us with a how to for the next person or for for the HPAT for when they.
So yes, I'm working on writing up my findings.
Okay.
So for instance, what did we just talk about with the police PDs was one thing. One thing is about hiring fairs. When I got here, they said Fort McCoy hasn't attended a hiring fair in, we don't even know how long.
I don't even know that we ever did we?
I don't know. I didn't find any historical documentation, but
I've been here 10 years. I don't ever remember us being part of hiring fairs.
But we have now been to the Black River Falls hiring fair. We've been to the Sparta hiring fair. We've been to the Toma hiring fair. We had a hiring fair booth at the Armed Forces Open House.
So you were at the one at Toma High School?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Right, so we were at all those. And this Friday, we're going to a mock hiring fair at one of the STEM, Science, Technology, and Education.
At the STEM school.
Mathematics, camp. So that we, granted, are the 8th graders going to come work here as supervisory engineers next year? No, they're certainly not.
They could in 4 years or 5 years.
But we want to make sure that they understand the kinds of things they're learning at STEM camp equal real jobs in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And those real jobs could be at Fort McCoy. So I'm going to, I started documenting where the hiring fairs were, where I found the information, how we paid for it. By the way, it was with the GPC. So we had to figure out, how to get approval to pay for all the stuff with the GPC. It's very easy for the garrison commander to say, yeah, we have plenty of money. Let's pay for this, 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 and this. And, of course, we're doing that, but all those things are a process,
Mm-hmm.
And I'm new here, so figuring out the local process. In my real world, I'm a billing official, but
right. The
procedures here are completely different. The internal controls for, for doing credit card payments are completely different. So I had to figure out how to, navigate the local credit card process. with regard to hiring fairs, we never had been to any as far as I could tell. So now we've been to several, and now we know how to go to them. We didn't have any hiring fair materials. There was nothing. So I worked with the MVI folks to develop...
They're a nice team, aren't they?
Yeah, they are very nice, especially Kendra. She was super helpful.
Yeah. She's fairly new, but they're a good team.
Yeah, I would definitely give a shout out to her if I could. She was so helpful to me. We came up with, I came up with a draft of I think I'd like a flyer to look kind of like this.
Yeah.
And then she helped me take my idea and turn it from a rough PowerPoint sketch into...
That's when you wanted photos of that one event, yes.
Yeah, so we needed photos. And we went through all, we focused primarily on the directorates that were hurting.
Yeah.
So DPW and the police, and then an overall civilian personnel hiring flyer for people to just say, hey, Fort McCoy has civilian jobs. And so now I have all those document numbers and how to, if we want to request more of those, how we do it, if another directorate wants, so for instance, a PAO lost everybody tomorrow, and Tanya wanted to say, hey, can we put together a hiring, a flyer for PAO so that we could get that out to the local schools that do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a process now to do that. And so it's just a matter of following the steps to make a new flyer for whatever directorate here to include tenant organizations, although I did find out last week that even though the garrison commander's intent is to get all the jobs at Fort McCoy hired, regardless of whether they're MCOM or not, from a funding perspective, headquarters can only pay for MCOM stuff. So when I talked to the NEC, the Network Enterprise Center, mm-hmm. they wanted to do one of these as well, but what I found out was, we can't pay for it, so we're going to have a process for them to pay for their, but they can still use our template.
I'm sure they even weren't happy to.
Right, but they can still use a template that we designed.
Right.
Right, so it's just a matter of plug and play, stick the photos in, run it through the, you know, the ordering through, process.
Through their wickets and, yeah, figure it out.
And then the other thing that we didn't have was any table paraphernalia. So there were no table covers and there were no...
we were basically inventing it, so...
Yeah, it was all kind of start from scratch. We did two things. A stopgap measure, again, that we use MVI. They put together some, you know, some of those foam board, I don't know, large, like this size. I don't know how big that is. But signs for me. You know, the Army values was one.
Oh, okay.
And civilian jobs, types of civilian jobs and things like that. You know, so that we could have those on display at a hiring fair. But then also, I reached out to a local... Well, I did some research and I found a local sign producer. And at the one this Friday, I'm finally going to be able to show my new stuff. I've got a table throw and I've got retractable signs, right? And then in the meantime, I borrowed a backdrop from DPTMS. They had an old training backdrop that I was using as a temp.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, as a temp solution. I'll send you the photos that I've taken that you can see because it'll help make that make a little bit more sense. But yeah, so we, you know, I borrowed those because I said it helps people to see, you know, the Fort McCoy, the one that they see on the street, that's a real place with real people. And at those hiring fairs, I got the question I got most of all was, do I have to go to basic training to work at Fort McCoy? And so there's a real disconnect in the local community. Yeah. About what we do here. You know, it's not just soldiers, it's civilians too. And what I found that to be the case really everywhere. Even I spent a couple weekends visiting my family and I talked about what I'm doing. And many of my family members said, I didn't realize there were civilians who worked on those bases. I thought it was mostly military.
I go back home. I've been retired from the Air Force for many years. And then when I tell them I work for the Army, they say, well, do you have to wear an Army uniform now?
Right. So same kind of thing.
And I said, I'm a civilian now. I don't... What?
Right. But I think actually this is, you know, maybe really speaks to the long-term and larger problem, and it's that the Army, you know, Fort McCoy won't be able to solve the Army's hiring problems.
Right.
And I think I understood that the Army is working on a marketing campaign for Army civilians. So what we're doing here at Fort McCoy really is kind of a, until the Army does its full-time, you know, whatever its marketing campaign is going to look like. I don't know how familiar you are with the HPAT.
I'm somewhat familiar with it, yes.
So, you know, long-term, their goal is to have a team here at Fort McCoy that really handles a lot of the hiring things.
Well, I think their long-term goal is to have somebody here permanently who's been doing what you're doing.
So what I'm doing here, besides learning from me, so that I'm, you know, getting a career-broadening benefit, is setting up some stuff so that when that person comes in, that person won't have to do research on how to get signs, and they won't have to do research on how to sign up for hiring fairs.
I wouldn't even be surprised if they're in the process of writing a position description based on what you're doing right now. So
hopefully, you know, this is going to be setting the next person up for an easier transition into the role. I believe that the intent is to have a plan in place for this civilian personnel team, but that they are going to do one more developmental career broadening assignment person like me.
Okay.
To come in the fall, because you know, it takes a while to change the positions officially on installation. So I think the intent is to do one more like me for 4 months, so that there won't be a break in, you know, services. And then that person will also very likely not know a lot about civilian personnel hiring, and so as that person discovers and explores and researches, they may come up with things that I didn't, you know, uncover.
They'll have the benefit of knowing what you did, so.
Right, they'll have some stuff, and then they can go from there and maybe find out more things and make it, you know, make it better.
And I think just having you be a grunt, basically a breaking the ground in this process is going to benefit a lot of people, to be honest, so.
I gotta say, honestly, I had hoped to do more, but what I discovered was you don't know what you don't know. And so I didn't know how any of this stuff worked, and finding out how everything works mm-hmm. took time.
But you came in cold. You didn't really know anybody at Fort McCoy, right?
No, I didn't know anybody at Fort McCoy.
Have you even ever been here before?
I have been here. I was here when I was in uniform.
Oh, okay.
Did my Army Reserve duty up here 1 year. We had a two or three week annual training.
When was that,
though? Oh, gosh. 20 years ago.
Okay. So well, this place has changed a lot since then,
maybe
right?
More than that. Maybe 25 years ago. Yeah, I was in another life, you know.
So this place has changed a lot since then, I would imagine.
You know, I will be honest that when I was here, I did not see a lot of Fort McCoy outside the training facilities. So okay. It's different.
Well, if you're here just a couple weeks, you're right. That's like in, do your training, and get out.
Yeah, we were here and did, you know, I was in the barracks and we did.
Yeah.
It was a signal exercise. So I was, you know, I've been here, but I haven't really been here.
Right.
So, yeah, I totally came in cold. I didn't know anything about Fort McCoy or, you know, other than that it was a training installation. That was pretty much all I knew. I didn't realize what a large proportion of civilian people to military personnel. In my office, I am a civilian, one of five civilians embedded in an office of 19, and we have a higher headquarters just up the road in another another building mm-hmm. that is about 10 civilians embedded in an office of 60 people overall.
Mm-hmm.
So our civilian military ratio is we're definitely the minority.
Right.
So this has been a huge change for me. I don't think I've ever worked in an office that was all civilians before.
Yeah, there's a lot of civilians here.
So it's been very different for me to see.
The military is definitely the minority here.
Yeah.
And that's not unusual here because of the transitional nature of the... Well, you were an example of that when you came here to train. So,
right.
You know, the transient training troop population here swells, you know, this time of year, and then wintertime, we're here, we have training here all the time, but
right, but it's mostly summertime.
Yeah, the amount of buildings, property, and stuff that is taken care of here, it's all civilians,
right?
And yeah, so but a lot of us are ex-military or veterans or mm-hmm. or people who grew up nearby here, so
in the area.
Not me, but I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, so
yeah, that was kind of my first question when I got here, because I arrived on February 28th. There was snow on the ground. I'm from Georgia, so I don't know how to drive snow.
North or South Georgia, though?
Atlanta.
Okay.
So
you're from the Mecca, Georgia,
right? So I got here and there's snow on the ground, and I was like, what am I gonna do? What am I doing here? This is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know, why did I come? My first meeting with the garrison commander, and he was like, yes, we're gonna have in 4 months 100% hiring. And I was like, oh my goodness, what did I get into? You know, because this is a developmental assignment. The whole point mm-hmm. is for me to learn, and I think really, you know, he has that as a long-term goal. But everything we do is a small step towards getting there, you know, whatever that looks like. I had hoped to be able to utilize some of the local radio stations or news outlets, you know, maybe get an ad in the newspaper or some kind of media. And I did some research into the packages and what that would look like. But when we ran it through Legal said, well, you can't do that because of, you know, whatever these reasons were, and we couldn't do that. And so that was a little bit of a bummer to me. I spent a fair amount of time, you know, looking into this, getting
it's
cost
about
estimates.
Competition with others, and the cost, I think, is part of that.
And maybe somebody who knew about civilian personnel policies might have known that already, but nobody did. Nobody here knew.
Right.
So we started looking into it, and I spent a fair amount of time talking to the newspapers and their marketing departments, and found some great ways to market. But in the end, we aren't allowed to do that, so we have to do other things. which was why we were, you know, we had the booth at the Armed Forces Day, so that,
yeah.
you know, the average person coming on the installation.
You seemed pretty busy there.
We were pretty busy. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I, you know, I was struggling with, well, the lawyers say we can't do this, so what, how do we do? You know, a lot of it's word of mouth, but also as people were, have been walking by, I provided them a contact form that said, hey, you know, are you interested in working at Fort McCoy? These are the kinds of jobs that we have. And if you'll provide me your contact information, I will, and the kind of job you might be interested in, I can reach out to you. So over the course of the hiring fairs and the Armed Forces Day, we got about 20 different people who indicated, 20 or 25, indicated that they would be interested in looking at jobs at Fort McCoy. And really what I did was I took all that information, and I, if they provided me their resume, I read through their resume. And then I reached out to them to give them information like, these are the jobs that are open right now that I think, based on your contact form, you might be interested in. Here's how you make a USA Jobs account.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you, you know, search for jobs at Fort McCoy. This is, you know, the process of, you know, whatever. And so I provided them with information. And I was super excited. I got back feedback from one person out of, I don't know, 25, who said, I applied for one of the jobs you recommended. And I was like, yay. I don't know if the guy will get hired or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really happy to say, you know, at least one that garnered, you know, one person. But it was brainstorming. How do we get the information out to people if we can't advertise on billboards and we can't use the newspaper? Well, you know, we... And you know, if you ever go and talk to MWR, they can offer jobs. They can sit down and have an interview at a hiring fair and offer a job on the spot. Appropriated funds, you can't do that.
Right.
People have to apply through USA Jobs. So I was trying to get them, you know, information out so they could say, oh, you know, I went to the hiring fair and I can go on this website and apply for a job and here's the information.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, just to try to get out there, community outreach, and get people.
I try to keep in our paper, like, a running ad for DES, saying, you know, these jobs are available at DES, apply at USA Jobs.
Right.
It's not always easy trying to navigate people toward that. Because if you go on USA Jobs and you try to see, you don't see the ad for DES on there.
No.
All the time. So.
Yeah, I was out on USA Jobs the other day, and I only saw, on the appropriated fund side, a handful of jobs. Most of the other jobs were either MWR jobs or jobs at the 88th or something. But, you know, for MCOM appropriated funds jobs, there just weren't that many out there. And that was actually kind of the point of my contact form, was to say that, you know, these are the kinds of jobs that we have out there, but, you know, they only are open every 2 weeks or so, so you have to go back out and look again. And, you know... Unfortunately, one of the things I've discovered since I've been here, I've been to some of the Western Wisconsin workforce development meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin has the lowest unemployment in the nation. There are 2.5 jobs for every job seeker out there.
Yeah.
And Army jobs are not competitive money-wise.
Well, we have a lot of manufacturing that's... I'll give an example. There's a sand mine that offers jobs. That's literally, what, 10, 15 miles away from here?
Mm-hmm.
They're starting, it's between $25 and $35 an hour, which is probably way above what we offer in some cases.
Way above what we offer for starting pay,
and, yes. And that draws talent away there as well, but depends on the job, of course. I get it.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, one of the things, I was talking to one of my colleagues over in RMO, Joel, and, you know, we were talking about the challenge, and the challenge really is that when you become an Army civilian, you're coming for a career and all the things that come with a career.
Right.
That is benefits, long-term professional development, opportunities for growth and personal improvement, and you know, you kind of drink the Kool-Aid and join the team, and you know, it's a lifetime decision. But these kids coming out of college, I'm not knocking it, but they just have a different focus. They've got $100,000 in student debt. And
that's the debt. It's an issue. Yeah.
Need a job today that pays them enough money to get them out of that debt. And the Army, you know, we just don't, especially here in remote and isolated where we're getting our locality as rest of America, you just don't get, you know, you don't have the pay that's comparable to other companies. And I don't know what the long-term solution is for that. But that's something that I learned here, you know, about.
Yeah, that's the reality of today's job market in general across the nation, is that student debt is an issue.
Right.
I know when I was, because I have children in their 20s, and one of the things when we were putting them through college was to get them through college with as little or no student debt as possible. So,
right.
It was a challenge, but we managed to get one through without any, and the other two with barely any at all. So,
right. And it gives, you know, those people coming out of school have more choices because they can take a job like this where the starting pay may not be so great, but you grow into an amazing career working for the right. Army. But it's hard to sell that at a 3-minute interaction at a hiring fair.
Right.
That's very difficult to sell to a person. I can tell people all day long that the very best decision I ever made was joining the Army, hands down. But it's still hard for people to see that when they've got a bill for their student loans coming every month and they've got a mortgage to pay or whatever. You know, it's not evident. But, you know, I think we really exposed the local community to Fort McCoy in a way that we haven't been able to do in the past. I also signed Fort McCoy up for and created a handshake account. And what we discovered was that for the big universities, University of Wisconsin-Platteville, for instance, they will have career fairs in September. And they do all of their career fairs and hiring fairs through Handshake. It's a third party.
Right. And Platteville's a little ways away, and it's down in the southwest corner there, which is probably an area that we have, and it is hard.
Well, they have an engineering program. It's a great idea. They have an engineering program. And so, you know, next in September, Fort McCoy, with its brand new shiny Handshake account, can sign up for the, you know, UW-Platteville hiring fair and maybe get some engineers, because they're always hurting for supervisory engineers here, but they also need engineer techs. So people who, maybe are not getting an engineering degree, but they have taken some engineering classes and want to come over and do some of this. But otherwise, they wouldn't know about these jobs otherwise.
No, that's a great idea, though.
So hopefully, you know, I talked to Leanne in DPW. We went down to UW-Platteville and talked to the engineering students, or she did. I sat there and listened. Unfortunately, when she asked the question, you know, of the senior class, how many of you have jobs, and this was in April, when you graduate, every person raised their hands. They're all going to jobs, right?
There's a big demand for engineers, yes.
Big demand for engineers. So, you know, will our presence at a hiring fair make the difference to get us an engineer? Maybe, maybe not. But it'll certainly at least get the word out that an option for you as a college graduate is to come here. And then, you know, we have these options.
There may be those who want to stay in this area.
Right.
You know, if they grew up in, you know, a town nearby, and they can get a job at Fort McCoy and work with our DPW and make a career here, they probably would.
Right.
Because we've had folks like that. The reason I came here to work here was because I grew up in this area, and I was like, well, military people are my people, so.
Right.
That's why
I'm here. For sure. I mean, you know, you want to do what you know. But that's kind of the thing. College kids don't know anything.
Yeah.
Unless they came from a military family or grew up, you know,
right,
area.
And I know, like, we have a guy who works in DPW in the natural resources. He's a forestry guy. He's only a GS-7 right now.
Mm-hmm.
He went to UWSP. The reason he works here is because he's from the area, but he wanted a job to make a career here. And just like our forester, he was a GS7 for years. But the guy who took the GS7 job, he wants to work here because he likes the program and what it's going to mean in the long run. And he's from an area nearby here. So, I mean, that's part of that family atmosphere. So I guess it just depends on the person.
Well, I have to say, this is one of my feedback will be that I think, you know, long term, whoever they hire for this job, you know, permanently, I'm kind of a fill in and figure out the process person. But the person that you hire full time, be great if that person were kind of from this area, because that wouldn't, you know, he or she would understand the community and know kind of I didn't know anything about the area or what the competitors are or any of those things. So kind of understanding that took me some time. But if somebody's kind of local, then maybe that will be easier for them to understand.
I really got to tip my hat to you for really jumping in on this and doing all the work that you did, because first of all, coming in cold to an area that you really don't know much about.
Nothing.
Especially being originally from Georgia.
Yes, so definitely coming in cold for sure.
Coming in from overseas, you know, but you know, you're prior military, so I mean, you're a person who understands that when you live overseas too, you know, you go wherever you go to just to learn your surroundings, right? And figure out what you got to figure out right away. So,
well, I got to say,
you took your task and you ran with it, which says a lot about you, I think, and I think that's really commendable.
Well, I was really pleased that my leadership supported it. It was really, you know, serendipitous timing. My boss and I were talking about the fact that in order for me to get a promotion, I really needed to broaden the scope of my duties, but in the job where I work, there was no opportunity for me to broaden the scope of my duties. You know, I needed to add on, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then out of the blue, this career broadening assignment came up, and it was the part of my, you know, the skills that I'm missing. So to learn about human resources and civilian personnel. And I said, hey, interesting, we just had this conversation, and this developmental assignment came up. What do you think? And my boss said, yeah, you should do that. So they were very supportive and helpful, letting me come here for this.
And now you've probably made some lifelong friends.
Well, I got to tell you, I would come back here. I didn't think I would when I first got here. My first 2 weeks, I was terribly homesick. But it's been a really, especially when the sun came out and spring came, it's beautiful here.
Yeah. Yeah, usually winters here can be, they can be rough, or they can be okay. Where I grew up in Michigan, in the UP, where you get 200 inches of snow every year. Yeah, you don't want that.
No, I can't even fathom.
Or North Dakota cold, where I've lived before, you know, 80 below wind chills. You don't want that. I've been in South Georgia in January. Forbidden. I'll take that.
Yeah. South Georgia can be kind of brutal, though, in the summertime.
Oh, yeah, the humidity down there in the summer can be rough, but I like the giant pine cones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's been really interesting. One of the things that we did, I worked with Lori Retzloff. She's the USA
volunteer coordinator.
Yeah, but also she is a USA Jobs trained person.
Yes, she is, so yes. She's very well versed in that, yes.
We went out to Western Tech and did a USA Jobs training for the people who work with folks in the community looking for jobs, like Workforce Connections and the Western Wisconsin Workforce Development, the veterans agencies. Yes. Anyway, all the little job-seeking organizations out there in Sparta-Toma and the area, they sent their people in, and we did a training on USA Jobs on how, so that they could explain to their job
how to build
seekers.
That resume in USA Jobs, right. Which is really critical. Because if you want a job in USA Jobs.
Because that was one of the things that we heard at some of the meetings was that, well, we have people come in looking for jobs. They struggle to get through they struggle to get to the process.
Yes, because it is a process.
Right. So I think that that first training was very successful, and I think the intent then is to do it again. You know, do maybe a basic one and a more advanced one. But Lori is trained, and it's definitely worth going back out there and presenting that to those community workers who are helping the community find jobs. Because people do get frustrated with the process. It is really challenging.
It is. And
or it can be.
I've encountered that with people who had applied for jobs with our office, as a matter of fact, in the past. They're like, well, I applied. I didn't get through the ringers. And then they reapplied later. And, you know, they got in the finals, but they didn't end up getting hired later on. But this was years ago. But
right. And I don't think it's any different now. You know, the understanding when you look at USA Jobs, whether a job, you know, are you authorized to apply for it based on your service or based on your disability or based on, you know, your various preferences,
right.
It's kind of hard to navigate. And people don't understand what you need to do.
Well, years ago when I used to help a lot of people with their resumes for USA Jobs, what a lot of people weren't doing was adjusting their resumes to fit with the job description that's needed, because they would just make a resume. It would be built on, you know, I did this, I did that, I did this, and I did that. And then they'd throw it in with this job, and it wouldn't be anything applicable to what the job was asking for. Well, you have to rewrite that resume to fit what that job description is asking for.
Right.
And really sell yourself to that job description, because that's what those folks are looking for.
One of the things that Lori told the group that I thought was definitely a takeaway for me was, when you tell somebody you did something in your resume, then you need to ask yourself the question, well, so what? You know, so what?
Check the time.
Oh, it's quarter till.
Okay.
You know, so what? What does that mean? Because the person reading your resume might be a person at CPAC who doesn't know anything about photography or doesn't know anything about nursing, and they have to understand, you know, when you write your resume, well, so what? And that's something that I think I'm going to take that back with me in my mind, that, you know, when you're doing these things, you definitely have to include the so what to what you did, because you can't expect the person reading your resume to necessarily understand.
And now in your time here too, you were really a big part in getting the hiring process action team boosted a lot more. And I know you've done some work with Jamie Goulart,
mm-hmm.
and Mike Mottowell,
right.
Our workforce specialists. And they've kind of reinvented their whole process for welcoming new employees as well. Just from what you've learned from being here and seeing our processes kind of get boosted and improved, how do you feel about being a part of that?
Well, I thought the whole process has been really positive. I think that the onboarding process that they've kind of, really started, developed, and are still working on perfecting,
mm-hmm.
is great. I didn't sit through the whole onboarding because I, you know, had limited time.
Yeah, but it's quite a process.
But I did sit through enough of it to get the feel for it, and I really felt that it was welcoming to new employees, and regardless of where they came, where they're going, if they're going to MWR, or they're going to the logistics people, or they're coming to MCOM jobs, you know, let them know that they were welcome here, and that, you know, these are the services available to them. So I thought that was great. And incidentally, we just got a new hire over an RMO from the VA, and he went to the hiring, the in-processing. And when he came back, I asked him a few questions, you know, to provide some mm-hmm. feedback to Jamie. And he said that the feeling at the in-processing here was so welcoming compared to his previous job.
Okay.
And that the presenters, they seemed happy to be here and happy to share the information, and not, you know, not angry about it. It didn't feel like a chore for them. It felt like something that they were happy to do. And I thought that was really great feedback, you know, to know that, you know, people do appreciate it.
Yeah. And both Jamie and Mike are fantastic people, right. So.
And I know for me personally, I'm going to take the what I got from the M processing here, and when I go back home, try to incorporate that and apply that to all of our new personnel as they come in.
Nice.
We don't get so many new people, but still, right. It's value added to have
that and process. Considering that you have such a high military to civilian ratio, the new civilians will probably appreciate that because, you know, there's only so many of you.
Right. There aren't that many, and I feel like we've mostly just done it on the fly. So I was like, you know, Jamie and Mike have a really good process. They've thought about it.
And they'll be happy to share it.
Right. And so I want to take that back as a model for how do we do and
processing. Well, they'll love that.
So, you know, this developmental career broadening assignment, my boss wanted me to come back with as much good, you know, how to do things ideas as I could take. So that's definitely one of the ones that I'm going to take back with me, the in processing, because I think that was great. It's good value added. And it won't be exactly the same, but, you know, I'll take some of the most useful parts from it when I go back home. And okay. Hopefully do we'll be able to apply that to our organization. Something else that I know, I don't think I really realized until I got here, was that when people advertise jobs in CPAC, you know, you can advertise a job as open to the public, and then you can advertise it with a list of preferences, and you can select from either one of those lists. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I'm pretty sure that my office only ever submits jobs to CPAC using one of those methods, not both. And so that's going to be one of the questions that when I go back, I'm going to ask our CPAC.
Yeah.
Hey, when we're doing, you know, I know we have two people who are leaving this year, a secretary and a protocol officer, and those jobs are going to be out for hire. You know, how are we advertising them? Because I learned at Fort McCoy that you can advertise them open to the public and you can advertise them as, you know,
right.
This other do way.
Both.
Are we doing both? Are we maximizing our exposure?
Right.
I don't know, but I don't think we are. So that was another one.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You know, kind of learned that that's a possibility here to get, you know, to get the best
as
employee.
Being over there, you could get an American living in Belgium, mm-hmm. or you could get, you know, a local national too. So.
Well, not for any of our jobs.
Well, that's, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Working in shape, yeah, you have to have somebody specific.
Yeah, we have some clearance requirements
that
local nationals
yeah.
can't even come through the doors. So.
Yeah, very specific requirements.
I've been there for so long now. This has actually been, on a totally separate topic, really great to be on an Army installation again. Because
yeah.
I've been overseas for 21 years in various capacities. I was a defense contractor. I worked for MWR for a while, for the joint staff. But it's been a really long time since I've been on a real Army installation.
And actually one that you were at before.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, it's nice. It's nice to feel like, you know, to come home to the Army again.
Yeah.
Right. This, it's a little sentimental, but I told my husband, I was like, the sun shines here a lot and the bugles play and I like my heart's a little bit happy just to, you know, kind of experience
yeah.
the Army again. That's probably not good for your article, but
no, so,
you know,
that's actually
that's
not there's
relevant
nothing wrong
at
with
all.
That.
But it was really nice to just kind of have that, you know, reminder that I'm a DA civilian. I don't work on an Army installation ever because
right.
my job. It's nice to, you know, come back to the Army and be reminded of it.
I feel like that every time I'm, like, driving across country and I can stop at an Air Force base.
Oh, of course.
Because it's just what I was used to for,
right.
you know, two
all
decades.
Those years.
And, yeah. But,
yeah.
you know, I've been with the Army now for a while. It's like,
right.
It's just different.
It is, but it's better. No,
I don't have any. All my time with the Air Force, too, my first base was the Azores.
Oh, wow. It's hard to get better than that.
So, you know, it was basically a joint assignment. So when I was, right. when I was over there, my office, I had the Joint Forces Azores. So we had Navy, we had Army, and we had Air Force. So the office itself was Air Force, but everybody around me was, you know, all the services. So that's what I was used to. So I got my, I was there for 2 years, and then I went to my first Air Force base.